This is Ashley Bond, Miss Illinois USA 2009 and a member of the Chicago Lovables. And you're listening to Fred and Mark on the Chicago Bullseye.
What's going on? This is Joakim Noah of the Chicago Bulls, and you're listening to Chicago Bullseye.
I'm not here around this week,
but
you may be,
but I'm not. You're hungry? Hey, Mom, bring us some meatloaf.
You don't think this is the greatest? I will fight you. That's no lie.
Then you clap for the killers.
All right, let's rock.
Give it up for them gangsters.
Throw off that.
One time for the killers. Double up for them gangsters.
Just live in the dream.
I have been wanting to hit one with the Chicago Bulls.
I gotta be honest, I come in,
it's
like a little, like I'm trying to get my bearings, there's cartoons,
where are
you still getting
here?
Yeah.
All right, we're going.
We got the great Tim Gallagher on once again joining the Chicago Bulls. Tim, thanks again for jumping on. I hope you're doing well. What's the latest, my friend?
Well, hi, Fred. I hope you're having a great summer, and I know you always like to say that you're living the dream, and I kind of thought I was living the dream a lot of times, too, until I saw that banana boat with LeBron and CP3 and Dwayne Wade. So I got a kick out of that, and you know, it made me think back. You know how I love the history of the game and the players that kind of brought us to where we are now. And I just tried to think back, you know, can you imagine Bill Russell, Elgin Baylor, and Oscar Robertson on a banana boat together? You know, I just can't imagine it, right? It shows you the world that we're living in now, though. I guess if Gabriel Union was on a banana boat, I might jump on too if I had the chance. But anyway, that, and then when you think about, again, I'm trying to get my mind around, you know, here's two billionaires, right? Steve Ballmer and Mark Cuban in Houston in July, which I couldn't be high on anybody's list to be in Houston in July, basically holding a candlelight vigil for a player that's averaged 11 points a game as a career high and shot under 40% from the foul line. So some of these things is hard for me to get my mind around, but I guess the good news is for us basketball loving people, the fact that on July 8th, middle of July, we're talking about the NBA and it's front and center on the headlines. The league probably has to really enjoy that. But you know, can you imagine 40 years ago on July 8th, though, did we care what Artis Gilmore or Bob Lanier might be doing? Probably not, right? But DeAndre Jordan is on top of our mind. So obviously we'll lead with that particular transaction. And I'm very fascinated by even the off the court elements of this in terms of just powerful owners, powerful agents, what kind of arrangements were made, what handshakes and verbal agreements were made and then broken. So I think that's going to be fascinating, and you know, some of it we may never learn. But, you know, you got some pretty powerful people, and slighting Mark Cuban, you know, who's kind of the – I guess I think of him sort of as the Donald Trump of the NBA. I don't know if he's going to run for president one day. He might. But, you know, I don't know if that's somebody that you want to slight or get on his bad side. So I'm not sure where all this is headed, but it's certainly fascinating to ponder all the angles and people involved. To get to DeAndre and the impact of his decision, and I haven't been as enamored about DeAndre Jordan as most people. You know, I know the positives that he brings to the court, obviously, with defense, rim protection, shot blocking. You know, obviously he has some highlight reel dunks on lobs. But, you know, I watched the Clippers quite a bit being out here on the West Coast. And I just, you know, a guy that becomes a liability at the end of games because of his free throw shooting. And I just find it fascinating that there's so much demand for him at such a high price. And I don't really think either team acquiring DeAndre Jordan was going to put them over the hump. And as I was thinking about teams in the West, and we'll get to who some of the winners were in terms of free agency and off-season acquisitions, but I still had them at best probably fifth in the West. You know, Golden State, San Antonio, OKC, Memphis, Houston, even New Orleans is on the rise. So I don't see either Dallas or the Clippers with DeAndre Jordan, you know, jumping ahead of many or any of those teams. So I know there's very few centers that I guess they feel can impact the game, but I don't think it's a game season or season changer, I guess you'd say, for either one of those teams.
Yeah, so let's touch base now. I'd like to get your comments on who are the winners and losers of this free agency season. Give me the teams that you really think made themselves better, and the teams that unfortunately are far worse.
Sure. Well, let's start with the winners, and we just finished talking about DeAndre Jordan and his decision, and I guess you still have to consider it a win for the Clippers because they would be worse off without him, and however they managed to wrangle him back to Los Angeles with whatever kind of house party they put together last night with Paul Pierce and Chris Paul or whatever reports were of what they were doing there and kept him there. And obviously the acquisition of Paul Pierce is key and even tied together with Lance Stephenson, where I think, you know, Lance is a little bit of a loose cannon, although not afraid to win a game either. You know, so he is a little bit of a high risk player, but he's also capable of doing some spectacular things and winning some games. So I think having a veteran like Paul Pierce to kind of guide and mentor Lance will be very helpful. And Pierce just has an overall steadying influence on that team, and I'm sure they'll manage his minutes. So at crunch time or playoff time, he'll be ready, just like he's been the last couple of years with Brooklyn and with Washington. I think there's also some addition by subtraction with the Clippers in terms of Matt Barnes being traded away. So I think Matt Barnes served a purpose there and has had a long career in the league as, you know, as a second-round pick and played in a lot of playoff games. But I just think you need to upgrade a little bit in that starting lineup at that position. And I think the combination of Stephenson, who again is a little bit of a high risk, and Pierce is going to help him get there. So let's put the Clippers on the winner's side. Obviously the Spurs, and that's been, you know, the talk of a lot of people, of course, because of LaMarcus Aldridge, and then the intriguing decision by David West to pass up a lot of money to play for a championship caliber team. So the thing that concerns me about the Spurs, and I love the Spurs, certainly Kawhi Leonard from here in San Diego State, and followed his career quite closely and watched him develop, and any basketball purist loves the way the Spurs go about their business. But I'm a little concerned about all that they've lost, you know, and I know they haven't lost any of the big three, of course, you know, Duncan, Ginobili, and Parker. They re-signed Leonard, they re-signed Danny Green, but the Spurs have kind of been the masters also of blending in the, you know, more of a role player or a veteran player that, you know, they've still found a way to utilize in key ways. And losing Splitter, Bellinelli, Corey Joseph, Aaron Baines, and again, those aren't names that, you know, are household names and marquee players or all-stars, but those guys played a lot of key minutes and helped the Spurs win a lot of games, especially during the course of the season when Popovich was managing minutes and resting key players and as he was looking ahead to a playoff run. So I'm optimistic because the Spurs have always found a way, it seems, to find those chemistry guys, or finding guys that were playing overseas that, you know, are pulling them off the scrap heap. You know, I think of somebody like Gary Neal, who, you know, bounced around overseas and went to the Spurs and became a key off the bench player and, you know, has continued to play in the league. So I just hope for the Spurs' sake they can find other players like that to fill in the gaps around the stars. And plus, it's never a given, even with the Spurs, who are as good as anybody at blending talent and understanding players' roles, that these guys still have to mesh and blend and play together. So I think that, you know, I certainly give them an A plus. How can you not, for the LaMarcus Aldridge acquisition, keeping all their core star players and adding David West? But I'm going to be very curious to see how they blend and how the chemistry of the team goes.
Do you ever recall a player like David West taking a $10 million, basically just sacrificing $10 million to play for a team in the hopes of winning a title? I mean, I was racking my brain. Karl Malone was the only guy I'd say kind of came close to that when he did that when he left Utah for the Lakers. I still can't believe what he did. It's just amazing to me.
Right. And I'm sure I did hear something on the radio where over his career, David West has grossed, I think, something like $80 million, right? You know, I don't know how he's invested it and how much money he's got, you know, put aside, but I assume that, you know, he can afford to not earn another $10 million short term. And, you know, and he's got enough money to last several generations in his family. I mean, it's hard for us mortals to relate to this kind of money. So I guess he's seeing the window on his career is closing, and this is a rare opportunity to play with a number of Hall of Famers and a Hall of Fame coach in quest of a championship. So I've got to admire him for that, and I just assume that financially he must be beyond his wildest dreams in terms of what he's got available for his future.
That's true, but you do have to look at, you know, look what Dirk Nowitzki did, cutting his salary to, you know, hopefully make the Mavericks better. And you kind of contrast that with a guy like Kobe Bryant, who's, you know, made probably well over 80, I mean, gosh, his endorsements alone are probably $80 million, and he's still demanding every last penny from the Lakers, you know, and despite the fact that it's just killing their team, you know. So yeah. I still admire guys like Nowitzki and West for doing what they did.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, as a purist, you have to like those decisions to, you know, the type of experience they're going to have is worth more than X amount of money for them, right? And so there's something to be said for that also.
So, how about other winners and losers in the winners in the free agency period?
You know, some other winners I had, and we touched on them a little bit in the draft discussion, but Milwaukee. And they've kind of been a little sneaky and quiet about how they did it, because that's certainly not a team that you would think of as a destination for luring free agents, but getting Greg Monroe and then re-signing Chris Middleton, who was one of their guys already. And then we talked about their draft acquisition of Rashad Vaughn from UNLV, who I really like. They picked up Grievous Vasquez, who I think is a real gamer and, you know, is a clutch player and has had some playoff experience on a couple of different teams. And I just think there's a pretty shrewd front office there. And Jason Kidd, in his second year coming up now as the coach of the Bucks, I just like the direction that team's headed. And of course, Jabari Parker's going to be returning from injury. So I think that's a team to keep an eye on. And I like the way they're putting things together there. A couple other teams in the East I noted were Toronto. So, you know, they're able to keep their core of DeRozan, Kyle Lowry, Valanciunas. You know, they obviously fell flat in the playoffs, which was kind of surprising, I think, to a lot of people. But they shored things up a little bit defensively with the acquisition of Damari Carroll, who wasn't quite the LeBron stopper, I think, that people were hoping he would be in Atlanta. But I recall that he was injured somewhat, and Atlanta collectively kind of fell flat. Toronto also picked up Corey Joseph, so that's one of those Spurs I mentioned that, again, not a star, but has the reputation of a very good defensive player. He's returning home to Toronto, so bringing some of that Spurs winning culture to Toronto and a defensive presence. And then in the draft, they picked up DeLon Wright. They acquired Norman Powell from UCLA, who I've seen quite a bit. He played high school ball here in San Diego and played at UCLA, so I followed his career quite closely and definitely an NBA caliber defender. So I liked some of the things Toronto's doing. And again, in that Atlantic Division, which there's no dominant teams, you know, they have a chance to get a high seed or even win that division again. Certainly, we'll talk about the Bulls, and I like the fact that they were able to keep their core free agents. Certainly, Jimmy Butler, which we'll get to in a moment in more depth. But re-signing Dunleavy, I think, at a pretty reasonable price as NBA salaries go. Aaron Brooks. So I know all of those players are kind of on the tail end of their careers, especially Dunleavy and Heinrich. But I think as they look to groom guys like McDermott, Tony Snell, Mirotić, you know, I look at Dunleavy and Heinrich as kind of consummate pros. They've been in the league a long time. They've played in big games. They're both from first-class college programs, with Dunleavy from Duke, Heinrich from Kansas. So, they're winning players and pros. So I think having those guys in the locker room, and they can still contribute on the court as well, not at the levels that they once did, but I think hopefully Hoiberg will blend the veteran minutes with the young guy minutes and get McDermott and Snell and Mirotić more and more in the picture and groom those guys. And then, again, having an Aaron Brooks in your arsenal just against certain teams, you know, he's a speed merchant. He can erupt for, you know, have a 12, 15-point quarter on occasion. And I think having a guy like that to give another team's point guard, or the other team has a small, fast player like that, I think it's good to have someone like that on the roster. And so moving on to Jimmy, who, you know, certainly has a career that's on the upswing, and, you know, obviously he and Derrick Rose, and let's just hope Derrick stays healthy, are, you know, kind of the foundation for the next, you know, 5 to 7 years. And especially with the front line aging a little bit, you know, the window of the Bulls getting to the finals. And I think the East is still very winnable. We'll talk about Cleveland here in a minute, but I still think Chicago is right there in the East. You know, certainly there's the LeBron factor and, you know, and what Cleveland has put together. But, you know, I think the Bulls are certainly a challenger in the East. And I know they have their sights set on getting to the finals. They did last year. You know, I know things went sideways with Tibbs and with Gasol's injury. And obviously the time that Rose missed during the season, you know, hurt them in terms of having home court. But keeping Jimmy obviously was a major priority. You know, I love players like him that have had very humble roots as a player, right? He was a junior college player. He was not highly acclaimed coming out of Marquette, but that the Bulls were able to snag him in the first round, and then to see him develop has been quite exciting, right? I mean, who would have projected he'd be an all-star player at this stage of his career? And just the toughness and leadership that he's going to bring to the team. He just seems like a perfect Bulls kind of player.
So while we were talking, I just got a text that Mari Stoudemire is probably or most likely going to sign with the Miami Heat. Could you just address their offseason? What do you think of that team and whether their chances of competing next year in the East? I'm somewhat concerned, especially if Wade can somehow, you know, stay healthy and kind of – I thought he played pretty well last year when he did play. You know, I'm curious to hear your opinion on that team. You know, a team that was just devastated with injuries to Wade and Bosch to end the season.
Right, right. Well, they still have a core of very talented players. I just think the unknowns at Miami, which are Wade's health, you know, would be first on the list. And then, you know, it appears Bosch is clear physically now and ready to go. You know, we talked on our draft podcast about what a steal they got in getting Winslow with the 10th pick. So, you know, I think that was a wonderful acquisition. They paid a lot, but they got Dragic in the backcourt, which, again, he's another guy that, you know, that I think is very talented, but I'm not as enamored by him as most. In terms of being enamored, is he a team that's going to lead somebody to the finals, right? I mean, he's an exciting player. He's a slasher and, you know, very dynamic. The other thing is, I know Hassan Whiteside really came out of nowhere last season to put up some impressive numbers, you know, especially blocking shots and rebounding. I know there's some issues with his temperament and professionalism, I guess you'd say, and hopefully being around the type of veterans and, you know, front office leadership with a Pat Riley there that will get tempered. I just think with Miami, you know, they certainly are a threat, but I think there are too many question marks, you know, again, with Wade's age and health. You know, a lot of mileage on Wade, right? And although he's talented, can he sustain it over an 82-game season? I just don't know. I see Miami as you know, maybe a 4 or 5 seed in the East. 3 seed tops.
How about teams that you felt really were hurt by free agency this period that are going to be considerably worse? The losers.
Yeah, well, certainly Dallas seemed to be banking a lot on having DeAndre Jordan. And by the time that transaction shifted, the free agent market, you know, you just mentioned Amari Stoudemire going to Miami, but even, you know, that's another guy that's a big question mark with me in terms of just how much mileage he's had on him and injuries. So the fact that Dallas lost Monte Ellis and DeAndre Jordan to already a vulnerable and aging team, obviously aging, talking mainly about Nowitzki and what a wonderful career he's had, but, you know, certainly in the twilight of that now. So you have to mention Dallas, and I think the tough thing for Dallas is there isn't a lot out there to make up for the fact that DeAndre is gone and out of the picture. Another team in the West, obviously, that was impacted heavily was Portland. You know, they lost LaMarcus Aldridge, of course. They lost Wes Matthews to Dallas. And they were able to keep Damian Lillard, but I just don't know what else Portland can put together up there. I mean, Robin Lopez is gone also, you know, gone to the Knicks. So just don't see Portland recovering short-term from losing that kind of talent. You know, the Lakers were very underwhelming, and I don't know if you'd call them a loser, just because I think the expectations were way too high to begin with. But, you know, getting Lou Williams, Brandon Bass, Roy Hibbert, I mean, to me, some of the Lakers teams I've seen in the last few years with, you know, Carlos Boozer, Jody Meeks, you know, they're all those kind of guys in my mind, which a high-mileage Kobe and injury-prone Kobe with that supporting cast in the West, I just don't see anything happening significant for the Lakers in the short term. You know, a lot of people were bashing the Knicks, and I know they weren't able to attract the type of players they wanted, but I actually thought Aaron Aflalo, Robin Lopez were two pretty solid acquisitions. Now, again, are they taking the team to the championship? No, but professional, talented players that have, you know, established themselves in the league, I think those were pretty solid acquisitions. You know, and again, you've got hopefully a healthy Carmelo, and maybe they're at least on the right track short term to certainly do better than this past season, which isn't going to be saying much. And even Derek Williams, who I know has not lived up to the promise of being such a high pick out of Arizona, but again, he's one of those guys that's shown flashes, but, you know, can he do it on a consistent basis? And, you know, and in the dysfunction of New York, you know, is he going to be able to do something that he wasn't really able to do consistently with Minnesota or Sacramento, which, again, are not great proving grounds for, you know, any young player, right? Because those are teams that traditionally lose and don't have stable front offices. So we'll see what happens with Derek Williams in New York. But that caught my eye as well when it came over the transaction wire.
You know, I thanks again, Tim, for joining us today to talk about the free agency period. I did want to touch on an article that you pointed out to me, which I got a chance to read. And it touches on why there's so many injuries. I mean, the stats that we saw for just the 2014 draft class, the first rounders missed over 400 games due to injury. And it's just a preponderance and tremendous amount of injuries, it seems like, in the NBA. Even the marquee players up and down, you know, the rosters in the East and the West. What are, you know, some of the reasons that you feel, maybe you could just give an overview for our audience about what the article kind of called out as the potential major reasons, and then like your opinion on what you think, if there's any validity to those reasons that the article mentioned.
Sure. Yeah, I thought that article was fascinating. I had actually a friend that does a lot of physical therapy and injury prevention and works with some NBA players as well, not for a team, but he's a consultant and, you know, has NBA players that he works with for injury prevention. And I'd say his approach is somewhat unique to traditional medicine in some ways, but I admire him and his views on things. And he's the one that forwarded to me. It came out yesterday, and if any of the listeners want to check it out, it was, again, on ESPN.com. The author was Baxter Holmes, and the story is called The Four Injury Risks Today That Young NBA Players Face. And we've talked about the preponderance of injuries. We saw it in the playoffs, of course, and it kind of diluted. I mean, it was a great playoff season as it was, but, you know, obviously with even players like Kyrie Irving, you know, going down in the finals, you know, certainly diluted a little bit of what it could have been. And just thinking last season of players like Julius Randle, Jabari Parker, you know, injury-ending seasons, you know, fairly early in the season. Obviously, Joel Embiid missed the entire season and also looks like is projected to be injured again this season. I was thinking back also, remember Blake Griffin missed his whole rookie season due to injury. People kind of forget about that because he was able to bounce back and has had a, you know, wonderful career, of course, with the Clippers, but his whole first season was lost to injury. So we've talked about it a lot and are speculating as, you know, why is this happening? And you'd think in this era of the NBA with all the advances in medical treatment, the advances in how they travel, and just you certainly think of, you know, first class everything for these, you know, these multi-million-dollar athletes. So why all the injuries? And I'll just touch very briefly on the highlights of the story and comment on a few of the things. The other thing in the story is, as it relates to the Bulls, is, you know, certainly we all know how injuries have impacted Derrick Rose's career. And then also Doug McDermott's quoted in the story as well as a young player. And again, Doug missed a chunk of the season due to injury. You know, part of it, and we don't really know how much that set him back, right? How much of it was Tibbs just, you know, not trusting a rookie in key moments of games, or that certainly was part of it, but how much the injury really set McDermott back as well in terms of what his development might have been for the Bulls last season. But the key things the article points out as to why players seem to be more injury prone today than ever before. The first point was the importance of rest and sleep, which is, you know, some of these things are things your mom told you when you were growing up, right? So none of this is really revolutionary, but in the context of today's NBA and athletes, I thought it was fascinating. And not only just, you know, the quantity of sleep, but quality of sleep. And they also referenced that the electronics that, you know, all of us are, you know, enamored with these days, but especially young people, young players with their phones, their iPads, television. So the blue light, the blue screen lighting, especially late at night or before you're going to bed, how that affects your mind and your sleep patterns. So I won't go into, you know, in depth about it because there's sleep experts that are quoted in the article, but, you know, that was an interesting point. The second thing was, and I'll just really sum it up briefly, is that milk consumption is down and sugary drink consumption is up. So as our young athletes are drinking less milk, and then there's statistics that show in our society there's a lot less milk consumed, which, again, kind of goes back to the things you learned in grade school, right? Milk makes strong bones, right? So references that, you know, Julius Randle, Paul George, you know, broken bones, right? And obviously, you know, it doesn't take a genius to figure out that the consumption of soft drinks and energy drinks not slowing down at all. The third
exactly.
point, and so, you know, and again, that just points, you know, to diet, right? Better diet. What kind of beverages to consume, and how that impacts body strength and impacts injuries. The third thing they talked about was there's just too many games too soon, you know, for young players, right? Where you think of a, you know, and I don't know the actual numbers of Derrick Rose and how many AAU games he played, right? But just, you know, players specializing in basketball at a very young age. And the article talks a lot about that. Julius Randle talks about playing against Andrew Wiggins and Jabari Parker since they were in eighth grade, right? They were in all these summer tournaments and playing, you know, just endless quantities of games. And just the mileage, the volume of games at a young age that that weighs on a player. And then the fourth thing was they point out in the article is this the movement away from more traditional weight training and, you know, now there's more revolutionary, and I'm not saying that the revolutionary training in terms of, you know, your core and other, you know, other physical fitness type things, but the article points out that just the movement away from more traditional weightlifting, you know, that also could be impacting a player's health and the propensity to get injured.
I don't know if I agree with that last point, just because I don't think in your day, I mean, did you have a lot of basketball players lifting weights? I just didn't think it was a common practice in the 70s and 80s.
Well, way back in the day, there was some stigma that if you lifted too many weights, it would mess up your shot, right? You didn't want to become muscle bound. And, you know, there's a balance, right, in terms of weight training and strength and doing it in a way that it's not going to affect your shot. But, you know, there was kind of that stigma, you know, maybe back in the 70s where if you, you know, pump too much iron, you're going to become muscle bound and you're not going to be able to have that smooth, you know, shooting release, right? So that's probably a little bit of a, you know,
right,
exaggeration. But, yeah, I think within moderation. But, you know, again, the article goes into some perspectives on it. And, you know, I'm not saying I agree with all of them. And that one, you know, that fourth one in terms of weight training is probably the one that, and that was fourth on their list too. So that was, you know, I'm assuming kind of the least impactful of the four in their mind, but really fascinating in terms of just some of the things that are happening now with young athletes and how that could be impacting their health and maybe leading to some of these injuries, which again, it's unprecedented, right? In terms of the number of games that key players are missing.
I completely agree. Tim, thanks for pointing that article out to the Bullseye listening audience. Can't thank you enough again for your participation. You gave us, again, over 30 minutes of fantastic content. Really love having you on. Looking forward to having you on again soon, hopefully with a member of the Bulls from the 1970s Mr. Jim King. We got to finalize that schedule, and I'll have that over to you. But we'll hopefully have a guy who played on those teams with Dick Motta and, you know, Jerry Sloan and Bob Love, the first really beloved Bulls team of the late 60s, early 70s, up until about 1975. So really looking forward to that. And thanks again for coming on.
Okay, Fred. All right, well, have a great summer. Great discussion, as always.
All right, we'll talk again soon. Looking forward to it. Have a good one.